All right, let's get this started. Nice fade out, I like that. All right, I'm gonna stop tweeting. I'm sure people will be live blogging because we're gonna make a lot of announcements. Isn't that right, Larry? Excellent. All right, so thanks for coming. I'm Rob Tiffany, and I'm gonna spend some time with you talking about Windows Phone and the Enterprise. You may have heard we have a new phone, and it's Enterprise ready. Does everybody have a phone? Yeah? We squeezed big Windows 8 into a little phone. Isn't that amazing? And yet it's faster than our previous phone based on a real-time embedded operating system. Craziness. So Jenny up here is going to live blog for me for all the big announcements I'm going to make. I'm not doing my job well enough if I'm not immediately fired by the end of the session for disclosing too much. So let's get after it. I know you had a long walk to get out of here. You're probably really tired. Make sure you fill out those surveys because it's all about getting a phone, right? But first, I have to just totally pimp myself. So I work at Microsoft. I do mobile strategy, all up mobile strategy. A lot of it's phone, but I do stuff with tablets and kind of BYOD and things like that. Spend a lot of time talking to CIOs. I do these briefings every week. I spend a lot of my time doing these executive briefings. We have plane loads of executives from every large company on the planet flying into Redmond every week. And they come and they want to hear from us. And so I talk to them about primarily Windows Phone, BYOD, consumerization, security, building your mobile strategy. And here are all the places you can spam me, follow me. And my good friend Andy Wigley and I, at the very bottom, we did a fun thing last fall, this whole jumpstart, 20 hours of videos on how to get started building Windows Phone 8 apps. We did that in the course of 2 days. It was just grueling marathon, getting up at dark 30 in the morning, going into the studio to start videoing, and then just like hitting it, taking tiny breaks, and just nonstop. So it was brutal but fun, good times. And of course, I just this week just launched a brand new book. I just came out with a book. It's at the bookstore in case you're into Windows tablets. Maybe one of you bought a tablet, and I know a lot of you have been waiting in line to get your Surface. If you got a Surface Pro, notice the Surface Pro in the picture there. Anyway, it's a quick handbook that shows you how to rapidly build some enterprise apps using technologies you already have and skills you already have. So check it out if it's something you're into. And there's a phone version coming, yes. It may not work with the same stuff, though, but it'll be super cool. It'll be like an extension. So I'm going to do this session tomorrow. I'm going to do a session on HTML5 and hybrid apps on the phone. And then the next day after that, I'll do a session on building the mother of all mega giant enterprise apps. I don't know if you know this by now, but a lot of people have been building phone apps for a long time, and I would argue when you start building enterprise phone apps, while there's a lot of similarities, you'll probably find that you'll spend 70% of your time on the back end, actually. The device stuff you do might be this very smallest part of what you're working on. So what are we going to talk about here? All the cool new hardware and software innovations. I'm going to talk about security, device management, cool new productivity things, and development. So think of this as just kind of a kickoff intro session to Phone 8 and all the capabilities. I'm going to cover them all at a high level. I'll go deep in some areas, and then we'll have a lot more sessions this week where you can get deeper. And so here's my takeaway, and I only say this because this is what I have to do every week. Some of you are the end customer. You're working in the IT department. Some of you are consultants, or you work for other big companies, and they are your customer. And anyway, I want to make it easy for you to have these kind of discussions with whomever your customer is, or your CIO or IT director is, about our new phone and how it's great for business. Oh my gosh, look, it's built for business. This is just a quick build here. And you'll be seeing this over and over again, probably on all the Windows Phone presentations. But quick takeaway here is just how the consistent experience across platforms, and this is bigger than Windows Phone, obviously, the apps running across all platforms, whether it's Office, whether it's your line of business apps, and then our great device management story we have with SystemCenter and Intune. And I'm going to dive deeper into that in my own session here. So to start out, we have this shared Windows core. You know, I mean, what's the big news about Phone 8? And it's the same big news about Windows 8. We got the NT kernel running on ARM. I think that's the big takeaway, right? A few years back, we started a project in Microsoft Research. It was like called Project 19. I always got it confused with Plan 9 from Outer Space. And it was basically, let's get the NT kernel running on ARM. Let's get a subset, whatever it is, and then get the core CLR, you know, of .NET running on ARM as well. And so that project went on for a while, and that's what led us to where we are today, so that we can reuse this proven kernel that's been around forever across all these different platforms. And so all the goodness that you have, for instance, on something as crazy as Windows Server, you will see it bleed over into the phone. It may not be readily obvious. Obviously, each platform only uses what it needs. But if I, let me build this slide out here and look at these three constituencies here. Some of this will be really obvious to you. We have consumers, developers, and hardware manufacturers that get to take advantage of the fact that we've got the same NT kernel running across all these different chipsets, right? We probably all get the developer story, right? Reusing code. If I'm targeting all-in-ones, tablets, whatever, I get to reuse a bunch of my code. Maybe it's the 80-20 rule, something like that, 90-10, it just depends. Your business logic, a lot of things like that. You know your UI may have to be different on different platforms. Hardware manufacturers. Here's a great hypothetical, but it's as real as it gets. I could be in the tablet business or the laptop business, and I could wake up tomorrow morning and say, you know what? I think I'm gonna start selling smartphones. And they can do that, and it's not a big deal. And it's because they don't have to do some giant change or figure out or learn something new or go hire new engineers, because it's all so similar. And so you can pivot like that. And then consumers, obviously, they win the most. They're going to get this consistent experience, the same stuff under the hood, the same stuff they see out at the surface. And, of course, you know, this goes for Xbox as well. You know, you get that same look and feel. And so having that familiarity, that consistent feel everywhere, it's all good for consumers, you know, because training and learning and being comfortable is a big part of all this stuff. It's not just about geeking out about the technology. So hardware innovations. So seeing the dual core and more thing probably doesn't seem as innovative at this moment in time as it might have a year ago, let's say. Let me convey to you what I mean when I do the dual core thing. It is, over and over again, I'll talk about how we're just writing on the coattails of big Windows because we crammed the big thing into the phone. So we just get a bunch of stuff for free that NT kernel gives us. So while our new phones that have launched over the holidays in the last several months have been dual core, if we move into the future, you know, obviously other platforms are doing quad core, some are doing 8-core. Whatever it is in the future, if we need to get to a phone with 64 cores, I can just burn my face off with the phone, absolutely we can do it. It's not a big deal. It's not some huge engineering effort. It's not retooling. It's not, oh, God, how are we going to figure out how to do this? We're just going to flip a switch. So as you as a customer of Microsoft, and then for your customers that you talk to, the takeaway there is how much more responsive Microsoft is going to be to all of you, to meeting your needs as they go. We're not going to have these big lag times as we figure out stuff. We're just going to get this for free. Screen sizes, it's kind of funny looking at the 800 by 480. So that was the screen size we went with when we rebooted our platform. Remember, we went from Windows Mobile to Windows Phone 7? Seemed pretty high res at the time, not so much anymore. Most of the phones you've seen come out over the last several months have all been 720p or the WXGA. Micro SD card, had it in Windows Mobile, kind of didn't have it so much in Phone 7, and we got it again. Anyway, it's for media, videos, things like that. NFC, of course, is a big feature. One of the other things, the other takeaways here, when I talk about hardware, I could go forever just about the hardware. If you will think back, if you've been to any sessions before over the last couple of years, the big takeaway is that we created this thing called a chassis specification for the phone. While we had lots of people asking us to build a Microsoft phone over the years, just like Apple did, and we resisted, but we came pretty close. We decided to stick with our OEM partners, to give choice, but we almost built our own phone. And that, what I meant is we raised the bar on the specification. You know, in the old days, if anybody, does anybody have Windows mobile devices? Windows Mobile 5, 6, all those pocket PCs? So just to give you a rehash of that, you know, we would build the operating system and probably had three days of battery life, and it was just this awesome thing. And we would throw it to our OEM partners all around the world, and they're building devices. And they'd spend about 3 months tweaking, changing. They'd build their own drivers, you know, and they would keep working and building up to finish it off and customize it and modify it. And then they would throw it over to the mobile operators. Mobile operators would spend another 3 months customizing it and making it their own. And then what you got out on the other side didn't necessarily look like Windows Mobile, you know, and that was by design on some level. Those, they all wanted to differentiate, but it also caused problems with quality and experience and things like that. And so we decided, let's not do that anymore. No question, we went more with the Apple model, definitely went closer to the iPhone model. Android model is actually what we abandoned. The Android model is exactly the same model we had with Windows Mobile. Give a clean slate to OEMs, let them do whatever they want to do. It caused us fragmentation. It's causing them fragmentation today. But, you know, so anyway, we want consistency. We want your code to work the same, no matter if Nokia, Samsung, HTC, Huawei, whoever is making the phone. Everybody knows about the live tiles. We've had them since Phone 7 and Mango. We've had some new, we have a new tile size. And, you know, it's not just that skin deep. When you think about, whippy, I got another tile size. As a developer, when you're in Visual Studio and you're building your app, you are presented with these different tile sizes, and you're presented with what information you're going to present. Those things are all different on each tile size. You can choose to use all three, and you will surface different information in the background through push notifications. So it's actually a lot more meaningful from that than that, you know? And so in lots of scenarios, your customers, your company, they can pull out the phone, and maybe the answer they're looking for from the app is already on the tile, and they don't even have to launch the app, and they can just put it back in their pocket. So it helps in productivity. Don't forget, you can pin websites as tiles. A lot of people always think the tiles are all about surfacing information about apps. There's a lot of great HTML5 websites out there, and you can pin them on there. And, you know, maybe I should have used the Wolf Vision, but I'll give you a quick view. So, as Jenny up here knows in the front row, I'm like a real social media guy, Twitter guy. And so, let me just run across here real fast. Look how cool it is with Twitter, how I can pin all my favorite people that I follow and see their faces, their little pictures on there. And so this is a great example. I have a zillion little, this is my own phone, my custom, the way it looks. Everybody makes the phone their own. Mine has a million little pictures of all these people I follow who are kind of all my peers in the mobile space. And then lots of different tiles for permanent searches and things like that. That's just a quick example. Anyway, you know, it's great stuff. It's great for productivity. It's great to get the information you need quickly. So let's talk about security. Security is a big deal in the enterprise, and it can't be overlooked. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go from the hardware up, all the way from the boot process up to the operating system to the apps to everything, so that you get a layered security, you know, you've always heard the term defense in depth and stuff like that. Let's do it. So that you know, part of that chassis specification that we require of everyone, you're going to get this on any device. So to make sure you have a great experience as a consumer and as an enterprise user, we got to make sure that we have the most secure lockdown phone in the world, because we don't want malware. So system on a chip design using, does anybody know what this UEFI crazy thing is, this firmware? Unified firmware? All right. Some of you know it as the successor to the PC BIOS, and that's true, but it's way more than that. It creates a secure hardware environment and a secure environment for all the software that gets loaded after that. And so it's really letting hardware take care of a lot of the security instead of always just relying on software-based things to make that happen. So there's a secure boot process. If you go to a Windows 8 session, you'll hear similar things from them, because we did this on Windows 8, your Surface tablet that you may have just bought. after waiting for 4 hours in line, has this too. You know, security is a big deal. We're getting hacked every day. Microsoft's the second most hacked company on the planet, or organization. The U.S. government's number one. Anyway, so part of that, how do we defend against that? And a lot of people are worried that mobile is the weak link where security can really break down. And so this is a big deal. So this secure boot, you've got to have, the operating system has to be digitally signed. The apps are signed. The drivers are signed by us. Nothing loads if it's not digitally signed. So if you go back in time to the good old Windows Mobile days, and something emerged from those days called XDA Developer, and people started downloading ROMs, images for Windows Mobile, and then that migrated to become an Android thing. So in the Android and iOS world, we have jailbreaking and rooting. This is a no-no in the enterprise. CIOs, whatever MDM system they've bought to manage their devices, whatever security things they put in place, all that goes out the window if a device is rooted or jailbroken. Then it's a free-for-all. In fact, devices that are jailbroken can send a device management package erroneous, incorrect information to make them think everything's okay. But this is where malware gets in, and this is where your network gets attacked. You can't do it on Windows Phone because the OS just won't load. Nothing will happen. We have checksums, too, part of the secure boot. If anything changes, the whole thing halts. So you're never going to have an insecure version of the OS ever coming up, ever. So now let's go a little bit higher, device security. Device encryption, it's table stakes, isn't it? It goes without saying. You have to have a fully encrypted device to play in the enterprise. You know, it's not a want to have, it's a must have. So, easy for us. We've been doing this BitLocker thing for a while on Windows. So, makes sense that we would just grab onto that, right? Does anybody know what a TPM chip is? Excellent. All right. So then if you do, you know that the most secure laptops that you have in your enterprise have a TPM chip. And they work hand in hand with BitLocker. And they take care of those encryption keys and a bunch of other stuff. Well, guess what? We have a phone that also uses TPM. In fact, every single phone that goes out the door is using TPM. So as I mentioned up here on the slide, there's this area, you know, so you know who ARM is. They're a company in the UK and they build chip designs, and then people like Qualcomm make chips, or TI, or NVIDIA, or whoever. So anyway, there's this area called ARM Trust Zone, and this is where the TPM thing happens on our phone. Why is this important? All security is not equal. On some level it is, but on some level it's not. And so let's just talk really quick. If I have an iOS device, an Android device, and Windows Phone, let's say they're all encrypted with AES 128, for instance. You'd think, well, they're all the same. On some level it is, but the strength of the encryption key makes a huge difference. When Android started doing device encryption, they based the encryption key on the user's PIN. How many users use 1111 as their PIN? A whole lot. Or other simple, easily hackable PINs. So if you base your encryption key on the user, and let's just say 99.9% of all users are not savvy or intelligent about security, nor should they care, well, then you're going to have weak encryption. We do not leave it to chance. We are going the TPM route and doing everything in hardware because we don't want to leave it to the user. So that's the difference, and that's something you can take back when you're having your conversations around security. The encryption is controlled either through our MDM interfaces, device management interfaces with Intune or other third-party device management packages you might be using, or you can use Exchange Active Sync to enable or disable that. I mentioned SD cards at the beginning. They're just for media. The SD cards are not encrypted. If that's a problem for your enterprise, you can disable the SD card completely using a device management interface to disable that. Our security response center. So everybody knows what Windows Update is, and Patch Tuesday, and getting, you know, we're this great company that actually does sustained engineering. What a novel idea. Where we actually care and we keep working, we keep looking for problems, and we keep fixing things, and we keep making things better every week. Well, we do that on the phone too. If we find a zero-day problem or any other kind of security flaw out in the wild, we will push that out to your device. I know a lot of people are always, they hate how their mobile operator makes them wait so long to get updates to their phone. I want to get the next version. Why am I, you know, why are my friends on this mobile operator? there's that. Everybody has contracts in place with mobile operators, and mobile operators do control a lot about those kind of updates, but they do not control this. We have contracts in place with our mobile operators. If we have security problems, we do emergency override and push those patches out to all devices. Does anybody know what FIPS certification is? All right, now we're getting really weird here, aren't we? So FIPS is a U.S. military and government certification process. And basically, this is the gold seal of approval around security, and this is how you get your device used by the military. And the thinking goes, if it's good enough for the military, it's probably good enough for everybody else. So we are going through that process right now with Big Windows. There's only two phases. Right now, they're certifying the crypto algorithms. Anyway, we should be done with that very shortly. So we are right on track. And again, this is part of the goodness of being Big Windows on a little phone. We get to just kind of gravy train behind them. So now let's go to the app level. App platform. And this is even before you build something yourself. We have this chamber security model that creates a container around every single app. You may be aware of products that create large containers, encrypted containers on devices, and you can switch between them and things like that. Part of our operating system down to the kernel is this notion of containers around every single app at that level. So the apps are shielded from each other and the rest of the operating system. Just like going back in time with our servers and everything else working on least privilege, those boundaries, the apps cannot see each other. They cannot do inter-process communication with each other, share memory, anything like that. And then, of course, when you download an app from the store or whatever, you're presented with a list of capabilities that you choose. Those apps have to stick with those. They are not allowed to erroneously elevate their privileges. If you say this app can talk to the internet, it doesn't mean that it can tomorrow decide to use your microphone and start recording you. Or, you know, because I know of another mobile operating system that actually does this thing as well. They list all the capabilities, but somehow apps are able to start sending SMS messages to phone numbers, and then you get charged. Anyway, this is a big deal, making sure that they can't do that and go rogue on you and start causing problems. Also, when I talk about apps being shielded from each other in containers, there is no file system. There's no file manager. There's no, the apps can't see each other's data. The only way, you know, each app has their own isolated storage, their own private folders for their own data. There is only one way to that data, and it is through that app. So that's good to know. There's other operating systems with phones that have a file manager, and I can launch it, and I can see the data that each app is using, and I can go crazy with it. And then, of course, the public apps going into the phone store. They're all scanned for malware. I mean, a lot of it's security. A lot of what we do for checking is security. But don't worry. The original intent was quality. And so all the things we do when testing apps, most of it's actually about quality. You know, buffer overflows, memory leaks, things like that, to make sure that quality apps, we don't want zillions of junk apps in the store. We want quality apps in the store. And of course, they all have to be signed by Microsoft. All right, let's go one little level deeper around this whole notion of app containerization. We provide you with the ability to further bulletproof your app. So I'm a real mobile security, MDM, blah, blah, blah guy, and I spend a lot of time in this community that transcends Windows Phone, lots of other deals. So there's this idea, when you think about it, of your devices that you have in the enterprise. Some of them are going to be Windows phones, but they're going to be everything. We live in this BYOD world. You can't control it. Employees are walking in the door with all kinds of phones. They're not all joined to the domain like a Windows laptop with BitLocker that's using IPsec and fully managed. So there's no notion, default notion of that level of security. So I want you to think about this. This is specific to Windows Phone, but you can also generalize this across platforms as well. Your app, think of each app as its own island. Don't think of the whole phone or an encrypted container or anything as something that's going to save you. Apps need to take care of their own security. If you're going to be a successful mobile app developer, you're responsible 100% for taking care of your own security, not relying on someone else to bail you out. There's all kinds of startups popping up everywhere that rewrap apps, that do all kinds of things to bail you out. because your app didn't handle it in the first place. We give you all the tools you need to take care of it yourself. Your app, so you won't necessarily do this in consumer apps, but just stay with me here for a second and humor me. Imagine a scenario, your app prompts. It's an enterprise app. It prompts you when you log in for credentials, Active Directory, domain credentials, you know, domain, username, password. It uses those credentials because it's going to use those when it calls web services. It's also going to use those credentials as a key, an encryption key. Well, I already said I have an encrypted device, so why do I need that? Well, let's think about worst-case scenarios since I'm getting medieval in security. Let's say you misplaced your phone, but you were logged in when you misplaced your phone, and you were in an app even, you know? But let's just say you were in the phone. All bets are off. The fact that you had a PIN, the fact that you had device encryption are meaningless if you're already in the phone and the bad actor gets your phone. So now it's down to your app to save you. So the app has to prompt for credentials. It uses those credentials, let's say the password of that credentials, with our built-in .NET AES 256 capabilities that are easy for you to build into your app. Use that as an encryption key to further encrypt the data at rest within that app. It's not relying on the phone. So now you have double envelope security. The device is probably already encrypted anyway, but then you've got your own level of security based on your credentials. Then there's this idea about session attacks. And again, you can use this, think of it as a slider, a continuum. I'm going to give you the most extreme examples. Session attacks, you know, or imagine the scenario. Think of a website. You know how you go to a lot of websites, and if you don't use it for 30 minutes, it times out and takes you back to the login? Put that in your mind when you build enterprise mobile apps. Maybe the app probably needs to log out after inactivity as well so that it's not sitting there exposed to a session attack. So that maybe, I don't know what the time is. Is it a minute? Is it 5 minutes? But whatever you think is okay, have the apps log themselves out. So, like I said, they're going to encrypt the data at rest with encryption based on the key from the password part of what you entered in for your domain credentials. It'll use that as a key and the salt value and encrypt the stuff. And then, of course, you have TLS. You know, don't always rely or hope. You know, so part of the bailing out thing is people are always saying, well, I'm not going to worry about it. I'll hope that this particular platform I'm writing for is using VPN to get me in. And I hope that the company's happening to use the right VPN concentrator from the right vendor. There's a whole lot of weird mismatches out there across all platforms as far as this platform will only work with these VPN concentrators, these only work with these. There's mismatches all over the place. There is nothing more secure about a VPN tunnel than there is with a TLS tunnel, an SSL. So, you know, we're encrypting the same tunnel. Take responsibility. Make sure your app's doing the SSL. It's mindlessly easy to do that. Then, those credentials the person typed in the app, you're going to use those when you call your web services from your app. So when you call, if you're building web services using WCF or the web API, you know, and we have that credentials object, and you're going to pass those domain credentials because guess what? You know, I know we've all been spending the last few years talking about the cloud nonstop, and so I know a lot of you are probably focusing a lot on OAuth-type stuff. But you know what? In the enterprise, don't forget, 99% of the companies or more, think about what they're comfortable with. Think about the existing systems companies already have. Most people are still in their own data centers, and people are going to the cloud or doing more of a hybrid thing. And it's just a comfort level. It's a skill set level. It's using what you know and what you have. So let's not forget about just straight up NTLM and authenticating with your Active Directory. So now let's talk about how that works inside the company, the connectivity. So you're like, well, gee, Rob, how do I get those web services and stuff out to the device if I don't create a VPN tunnel? Oh, yeah, we have reverse proxy stuff. So almost 100% of every company on the planet that is using Exchange Server, and they took the steps needed to get that Exchange email out to Outlook Web Access so they can get webmail, which then automatically allows them to get email on Windows Phone or iPhone or Android with EAS. The steps they took, they probably used a product. They probably used ISA years ago. And they might have used TMG, and they might be using UAG right now. But these are Microsoft security appliances that proxy out. They take a virtual directory in IIS, and they publish that little pinpoint of information out to the internet. That's how, and so the user, instead of having the user having to set up a VPN tunnel to go in, they just use apps like they use the internet. They just want things to just work, and they just do it. So you securely publish web services and mobile websites out using something like UAG or ISA or other reverse proxy appliances out there. Again, you know, we have all the obvious public certificates on the device for SSL, and then you can add ones in there. And you use the credentials object if you're passing in to call web services to pass in those domain credentials that you had the user enter. And then, so remember, a VPN, and I'm not knocking VPNs, but just remember what it is. It delivers the entire network to the device, creates a big tunnel. Where could that be a problem? It could be a problem on a mobile platform where up to 25% of its entire app store is full of malware. And the icon to launch that app store really is a backdoor Trojan horse gateway so that those apps can now drive a truck through the VPN tunnel you created and attack your network. So we don't have that problem, luckily, with malware in our apps and our store. But as a concept, generally speaking, because again, I know we're all building stuff for all kinds of platforms because that's the world we live in. Think about those things when you're thinking about security and the best way to get stuff, because you don't want to inadvertently make it easy, thinking you're doing something secure, but inadvertently creating a giant tunnel to bad stuff to drive through to get into your network. Last thing I want to talk about is just, so you're like, well, how do all these people get, if you publish those things out, do people on Wi-Fi inside the network, do they just go right to the servers? Absolutely not. We're going to do this in a controlled fashion. So lots of companies have a visitor, a guest Wi-Fi network sometimes, where you can go in and so people who are coming over for a meeting can get on Wi-Fi and stuff like that. Well, embrace that and turn the volume up to 11 on that and build out an enhanced guest Wi-Fi network throughout your skyscraper, your corporate campus, your whatever, and send everybody directly to the internet. Every device. If you're not a domain-joined Windows 8 device or Windows 7 device or whatever, if you're not one of those, then treat those devices as hostile and send them straight to the internet. And then let them back in a controlled fashion to the apps that you are exposing to them. Do not let them just go straight at the servers and bypass it. All right, last thing I want to talk about with security. So now, you've already spent millions of dollars at your company on firewalls and DMZs and even DMZs and all kinds of stuff to secure your network. But there's one little place where we have a problem. And unfortunately, it's your own employees or your own partners or contractors or whoever you let in. The weak link is employees still send sensitive emails and documents to other companies, or they send it to their own Gmail account or whatever. So all that hard work you did and all that money you spent to lock down your corporate network, all that just went out the window because users can easily just forward emails and attachments anywhere they want to go. So that seems silly. Well, luckily, Windows Phone has an answer to that, and it's our rights management technology. And guess what? Everybody already owns this, and they don't realize it. It's built into Active Directory. Our rights management technology is already built in there. You probably already own it, and you just might not know that you have it. And so what this does is it prevents documents, emails, attachments from being leaked outside your company. So imagine the scenario then. I'm on my laptop at work, and I'm typing an email to a colleague at the company. And along the way, if I have rights management enabled at AD throughout my network, I just have these extra choices in Outlook that says, do not forward, do not reply all, do not save, cannot print, things like that. Well, Windows Phone honors all that. And so that prevents those sensitive documents from leaking out of the company. This is at an email level, an attachment, a document level. All your documents in SharePoint, this is a whole other conversation about data classification as we think about mobile security. You know, at Microsoft, we use high, medium, and low business impact to classify our documents throughout our company. It's something that you can think about. And based on that, we can control how things go out. Because remember, our phone isn't just about email with that. We have SharePoint client and can do document management that way. So let's now talk about device management. We've exhausted security. Let's talk about some MDM a little bit here. even before you have spent all the time to formulate a mobile strategy for your company, you're a little bit covered already. Since, not all of them, but since most companies use Exchange Server, you get this baseline of device management capability, policy enforcement, right out of the box. And this will hopefully help some folks sleep better at night. Because I know a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I haven't created my mobile strategy yet for my company, and I don't know what to do. I'm exposed, I'm whatever. Well, before you've done anything, EAS, Exchange Active Sync, we've been talking about this a lot. It does device management. Doesn't do software distribution, but it does policy enforcement. Does it do all of the policies? Does it do hundreds? No. It does just the short list of the very most important ones. Think of it as your BYOD MDM. You know, you don't have to install some agent on the device. It doesn't do heavy MDM with 300 policies and turning off the camera and locking down everything so it sucks the life out of your device and it's not fun anymore. It does light management. It enforces that PIN, that password. If you're at a company where you have to change your password, maybe every quarter or whatever, it does that too. It can force complex passwords. That IRM thing you see on the list, that's the rights management. You turn that on. Device encryption. And then remote wipe. So the basics. You can, and not just with our device, any device. I'm gonna just stick my neck out and say almost 100%. Any tablet, any smartphone that an employee walks in the door with at your company, pretty good chance the EIS bits are already on that device. And so that's your first level of device management to get you started with your mobile strategy. The next level above that from Microsoft is Windows Intune. So we've created a cloud-based MDM system that, again, it's light MDM. It's BYOD MDM is what it is. It's not heavy lockdown. And so it takes care of, it gives you additional policies over and above EAS, and it has software distribution. And it doesn't just do it for our phone. It does it for iOS and Android and Windows. So, you know, in a BYOD multi-platform world, it's a great product to cover your bases in a light manner, not heavy. There's a lot of other MDM packages that will do hardcore lockdown. That's not what this is. Anyway, our device, we make it super, super simple to enroll in Intune and unenroll and apply policy and discover the enterprise apps. We have a portal that the device gets. Windows gets it. Your Surface can get it. You know, we have portals for iOS. If you are already a System Center customer, then we make it easy to connect Intune to System Center, and you can use that dashboard to manage everything if you're already using that. But also Intune, it's just a simple-to-use HTML5 website. It's easy stuff. So right here, here's just, as you can see here, just incremental, a few more policies over and above EAS, and then some light reporting coming back from devices. So that when you look at your console, you can see what's going on with your, you know, tens of thousands of devices deployed throughout your enterprise. Mobile application management. So that's the software distribution part, right? There's all these different acronyms in this management space. There's MDM, there's MAM for application management, there's MIM for information management, and I'm sure we can invent some new ones today. So, you're probably wondering, I get, maybe I've even written some apps for Windows Phone, or maybe I've written apps for iOS and Android, and I know that as a developer I had to get vetted and all that kind of stuff, and there was a cert. Okay, none of that happened with Android. But anyway, on our platform all that stuff happened. How do you do it from the enterprise? Because Rob, you just told me at the beginning of the session that everything has to be signed by Microsoft. What if I want to have my own app store internally and I don't want Microsoft to see it? Which is a pretty common, obvious thing you want to do in the enterprise. So let me walk you through how that works. So instead of the developer being vetted by us, the whole enterprise is. So the enterprise, the whole company works with us, and we work with Symantec. Kind of makes sense, because they own VeriSign, right? So we work with Symantec. We do the vetting of your whole company. And then you get an ID and a cert from them. Where are you going to put that cert? You're going to put it in your enterprise CA, right? Then you're going to digitally sign a token that you're going to have that goes on devices, and you're also going to sign apps with that cert. So the device, that whole enrollment process, part of what happens in the enrollment process with your Windows Phone 8 devices is they get that token. that's digitally signed that basically says this phone belongs to this enterprise, and there's that chain that still goes all the way back to Microsoft. Then you also sign the apps. And then you can kind of put two and two together. We're matchmaking, aren't we? The apps I sign with that token cert only will run on a phone that's enrolled that has a signed token. So my super sensitive top secret app I built won't work on someone else's Windows Phone 8 device that doesn't belong to my company. So you don't have to worry. So that's your chain of custody back to Microsoft, and that keeps you locked down. Last thing I want to talk about with Intune is it's a huge subject. And it's obviously, as you keep hearing me kind of harp on this BYOD thing and personal and business and lightweight versus heavy. Speaking of lightweight versus heavy, I can't tell you. So I get to talk to these CIOs every week, lots of them. And there are things that IT wants to do that makes them feel good. And then there's outright rejection and pushback by almost revolt by employees of companies based on some things. So if you have corporate liable devices that you are giving to employees, you know what? You can do whatever you want. But if you've got this BYOD thing happening, which is taking over the world, where companies, employees are using their own device, good luck. What we're finding, more times than not, is when an employee is asked or told, you've got to install this agent on your device, and I'm going to enable 400 policies and do all this other stuff, employees are pushing back big time. And they're like, no, not on my phone. Get that agent off my phone. No. You may have also read on the internet recently about lawsuits, personal information, and things like that. So I know you're all hearing probably two things at the same time. How great BYOD is, it's going to save a lot of money, people are more productive, blah, 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 it's great. And then there's this other side. You've got to be out of your mind to do BYOD. There's lawsuits coming from personal information, even scenarios where people signed away their life with a company over a policy, and they've lost all the pictures of their kids or other sensitive information. Or employees are saying, no, IT is not going to spy on my phone. These are all things that are all, it's a confluence of things that are happening all at once right now. And, it's hard to make sense of them all. But, awareness is obviously the first step. So the keeping personal separate from business is part of that deal. And so Intune only cares about the corporate side of your phone. So when the employee comes in the device, in the office, they don't have to install anything. Stuff just works. Again, it's light MDM. You get a portal. People pull the devices, the apps. It's like their own app portal, except it's private. And they see it on their phone or on your Surface tablet. And you download the enterprise apps that you want. And that's all it does. And then those apps can potentially be auto-updated as new updates for internal apps happen. The inventory part. So there's the reporting. I'm at my portal. I'm looking at my 10,000 devices I deployed and what's installed. As an IT person, I can only see the corporate apps that were deployed and that data. I cannot see personal apps and data in that inventory. And then last but not least, when I unenroll a person, if they leave the company or whatever, for whatever reason, I selectively remove the business half from the phone. I uninstall the apps and the data and the policies, enforcement, and all that stuff. And all that goes away, and the personal information, pictures, all that stuff is left untouched. Big takeaway there. Pretty heavy stuff. All right, so let's get a little lighter here. I keep waiting for Larry to run up on stage. I don't know. Anyway, communications productivity. We use the People Hub, all these tiles, that's how we do contacts on Windows Phone. If you've been using Windows Phone for a few years, you already know this, and you see it on big Windows 8 now. So grouping people together in personal and work, and then being able to do group emails, IMs, SMS, things like that, that's how we do it. It makes it a lot simpler than other ways of doing contacts. Has anyone tried out the Rooms feature? My team uses it. It's great. If you have a team or if you're spinning up a V team for a project or something like that, it's a great way. They can share. You put them all together and you see all the tiles for all the team members, and then they can kind of share, chat and calendars and stuff like that, to-do lists. It's great just for a private team-based system. You probably already know, obviously, the live tiles are, we connect to Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff like that, and we have that on big windows. Email and calendar. Yes, we still have the best email and calendar in the world because we have Outlook. So you can connect to multiple Exchange servers. You can connect to Yahoo and Google Gmail and Hotmail and all those. We can do group conversation, or you can break them apart. You can have multiple mail accounts and calendars. You know, so like if just looking at this picture here, you see the different colors on the calendar. You know, maybe the red there in the calendar is your corporate Exchange, and the green might be Hotmail, and the blue might be Gmail or something like that. So you can group them all together. You can also break them apart. You don't have to have them all grouped together if you don't want to. Another thing is, if you're like me, and in Outlook, you have lots of folders that you've created besides your inbox, and maybe you have created rules to send certain from groups or DLs or things, aliases, into certain folders. You can pull all those down, and in fact, you can pin certain tiles for each of those folders so that those things can flow into those tiles as, you know, whatever you want. So it's a great way to keep track of things. So if maybe you're more concerned about business than I am, I've got a bunch of Twitter people as folders, but maybe you might have more serious things grouped as folders and pinning them to the start screen. And of course, we sync to-dos, the task list, and then developers are allowed to interact with this. This goes back to security. We want to expose platform things to the developers, but we don't want to do it in a free-for-all Wild West way, because we don't want apps to be able to just spontaneously send text messages to a phone number and you get billed for it, or worse. So we let you interact with it, but we do it with security in mind. We will let you create an email, but it still requires the user to finish off the deal, a UI is presented, or a text message, or things like that. We won't let you silently, invisibly start doing things, because that's where we get in trouble. So voice and video, Link and Skype. We've got Link. That's not even the newest picture of Link. I got Link 2013 on my device, and it's awesome. And so the corporate presence, IM, multi-party chat, the videos, being able to do video calls on your phone, it's awesome. And you can choose to, you can tell it, oh, I just want to do it on Wi-Fi if you want, or you can do it over your 3 or 4G connections. I love it. And then even simple stuff like just being able to tap a button to join a conference call. I know it sounds silly for that to be your best feature over video, but, you know, if you've ever been on a conference call and you're kind of holding your phone and you got a pen and you're trying to write down and type in the conference ID number that you have to get in to join a call, you know what I'm talking about. Skype. Skype is everywhere. It's pervasive, and obviously it's on our phone, and it's on your new Surface. And so it's kind of that consumer side. Of course, you can use it for business. And then, like a lot of things I'll talk about, these capabilities, VoIP and video, are built into the platform. In fact, these products are actually taking advantage of what's in the platform. You, too, can do so. There may be even sessions on this, for all I know, or some developer sessions. Anyway, we make it easy when you're building your .NET apps in VB or C# to add in voice and video capabilities. And these apps don't have to be running in foreground for it to work. It's just like a call. It's got to be stupid simple. If it doesn't work for Forrest Gump, then it's not good enough, right? That sounds kind of weird, doesn't it? Anyway, it's just like a dialer. It's just like making a call. It's just like receiving a call. All right, NFC. Part of our platform that we guarantee everywhere is we guarantee you're going to have NFC on every device. And so I just love that Galaxy S3 video commercial where the wife and the husband says, I sent you a video for you to watch on the airplane. Anyway, I'll get in trouble. But anyway, tapping phones together to send data is what NFC is all about. I know a lot of people just think NFC means mobile payment. Mobile payment is one use case, but there's a whole lot of it. But if you think about it just literally as what it is, it's this really close 2-3 centimeter connection where I'm going to send data from one device to another. Or if I need to send larger amounts of data over farther distance, I will use that initial connection to set up something larger, like a Bluetooth connection or a Wi-Fi connection. So I use it as, hey, I want to connect to you. I need to join, and we need to upgrade to Bluetooth, or we need to upgrade to Wi-Fi. And so that's the takeaway there. NFC tags, you may have seen those. It's kind of like a, wow, kind of like a barcode, something like that, or RFID. We use Secure SIM to do it. There's a few different ways to have a secure element in the phone for NFC. We've chosen to go the route of working with the mobile operators to do that. And so we're working with mobile operators to enable that around the world. And then it's easy. You can watch some crazy video from Andy Wiggly to see how you can interact with that proximity API to do those connections. The wallet is a great segue from NFC. Again, since people associate NFC and paying and wallets and things like that. So we have a wallet, as you might imagine. You can keep all your membership cards, credit cards, things like that, up to date. Think of the wallet as more of a framework, though. It connects to other apps you build, and the apps integrate with the wallet. If you happen to offer a credit card or a membership card for your airline or things like that, and so it's a central place for people to go and look at those things. If you sell things, if you do e-commerce or whatever, the website Woot. Obviously, or different deals where you go every day to see what the deal is. Well, imagine the wallet. Imagine you built Woot as an app, and you put it into our wallet, and you gave millions of people a reason to go look at their wallet every day because you could push down real-time offers every day. Say, hey, here's the deal of the day. I would love it if you would all do that, actually, because I want people wanting to look at the wallet every day and having a reason to do it, right? But anyway, it's totally extensible. Maps. We have the best maps in the world. It's so nice to be able to say that. We have Nokia maps. Nokia owns Navtech. Navtech's where most people get their maps from anyway. Anyone who, like a year ago or more, got the first Lumia, got the Lumia 800 or the Lumia 900, running Mango, you saw that it came with the actual real Navtech, Nokia maps, and that they worked offline, and it's all great stuff. So with our special relationship with Nokia, they've been very generous in offering maps to their competitors. So you're going to get these great, rich, offline maps on your Samsung device or HTC or whatever, And so that's a good thing. The offline maps, I think we all get the value in that, and literally you go in the mapping tool and you choose your country, your province, your state. Oftentimes, it will require you to be on Wi-Fi because you're going to download the maps. But it's just like the map system maybe in your car, in the navigation system. You're going to have all those maps offline. And so you're not going to get lost if you're driving somewhere where you're out of coverage. Because right now, if you use your phone to do mapping, it's using your data connection to pull down map tiles on the fly, right? And what if you lose that connection? Of course, all this stuff burns battery life like there's no tomorrow. The data connection, GPS, all of that stuff working at the same time. So anyway, using these maps, at least we eliminate part of that battery drain and makes things much more convenient. There's also Nokia Here Drive, I don't know if we got the beta for all the other different platforms, and it really makes it like your nav system that you've bought for your car or whatever. And in fact, I think the most important feature of the Nokia Here Drive is, how in different GPS navigation systems you can change the voice, male, female, what country, things like that. Well, the hidden gem in this product that trumps all the other technical issues is there's a voice you can choose called, I think it's like California Surfer Dude or something. I really encourage you to find that voice and enable the Surfer Dude, because there is no better way to drive than having, oh, dude, you've made it to your place. Oh, you got to turn around. Yeah, it's totally awesome. Totally awesome. It's like Spicoli, in Fast Times. So it's goodness, It's the important things. And then, of course, map controls, all this stuff, easily. Drag and drop, stupid simple, easy for developers to work with. So Office Mobile, you get Office 2013 on your phone. You get, PowerPoint, Word, Excel. And the key takeaway there is you get the full fidelity of those products, the same fidelity you have with a desktop, that round trip. Because I'm going to talk to you about all this other cool stuff about it, but the most important part is the richness. I know on other platforms there are all kinds of knockoff wannabe Office readers and writers and things like that, and they mangle and destroy your documents and the charts and the pictures and the way you had it formatted. That's the big takeaway here. is you get the new 2013 version from us, and the thing you're building on the desktop, when you open it on your device, it's going to look the same. And when you make changes here and send it back to the desktop, it's not going to be destroyed, and the formatting is not going to be screwed up. So that's a huge deal, and having that seamless experience. So we make it super simple to connect to Office 365 if that's something your enterprise wants to do. And in those situations with SharePoint, I talked to you about how we have document management with SharePoint, including the rights management I discussed earlier, security. Multiple people can edit those documents. From a consumer level, of course you get SkyDrive with 7 gig. And so all those documents, you know, the obvious use case is I'm working on PowerPoint on my laptop and I'm on slide 25 and I close it down, syncs to SkyDrive or SkyDrive Pro, part of Office 365. I open my phone, I open my tablet, and I open it up, and it's there waiting for me, and it's also waiting for me on slide 25, right where I left off. So it's this great seamless experience from platform to platform, no matter what form factor or size you have. It's just great stuff. OneNote, if you use OneNote for meetings, taking notes in meetings and stuff like that, it's a great usage case for that, and syncing everywhere. But it's also a dictaphone. It turns your phone into a dictaphone. I'm sure there are people that are so young that they have no idea what a dictaphone means. But anyway, we're like, what's that, Dad? We use reel-to-reel tapes, yeah. You can use it as a dictaphone, and you just start talking away, or you can have it sitting in your meeting, and it syncs with the cloud. And in the cloud, we transcribe your voice to text, and the text is waiting for you. Pretty slick. Pretty slick stuff. Development. Developers, yeah. All right, I won't jump around there. Let's talk about the development aspect here. So Visual Studio 2012, your one-stop shop for everything. So for your Phone 8 apps and your Phone 7, all your back-end stuff, as you might imagine. So compatibility with the older phones, Phone 7 and 7.5, is a big deal. And then, of course, you know, I feel the need for speed, like you all do. And so this whole compiled in the cloud thing is a big deal. We know our fastest apps we're going to build are in assembly language, but there's probably nobody doing that. So the next fastest is C++, right? And but it takes longer to build those apps. You're not as productive in C++. It takes you longer to build that. The length of your project is longer, and the risk is higher. It's because you're right there on the metal, almost. Not quite. Assembler would be right there in the registers. So How do you get that kind of performance, but you want to use a high-level language that's easy to use so you can finish your project faster and have less risk to your project? Well, we've given you that free lunch that you were hoping to get. So you get to use our .NET, you know, our XAML to describe the UI, and VB and C# to build it. And then we take that high-level language and we compile it to machine code in the cloud. And so you get that rockin' awesome performance at runtime on the device. But you built it really quickly, too. So it's the best of both worlds. So for apps, you know, again, use XAML to design the UI. You can use C++, C#, VB. All your old friends are here. Games, we've got Direct3D exposed to you. So, you know, the same kind of technology that other Microsoft platforms are using to build the most insane games ever built. Well, you get it, too. And so you can build those. And I know there's we got a session from Martin Struess that's going to talk about some of that. Mobile web, we support HTML5, and not just a little subset of it. We support all of it, right? So all those multi-platform HTML5 apps, you're good to go. Hybrid web containers, building a hybrid app, we can do that too. We have a project right in Visual Studio. What's a hybrid app? It's a native app with a browser control on it. Woohoo! But what it lets you do is it lets you reuse, if the 99% of the app is HTML and JavaScript, we let you do that. And so in JavaScript and HTML, the JavaScript can communicate with the native platform and call C# or VB functions and vice versa. So if we know there's always this race happening between native and HTML5 is always playing catch up and whatever comes next after that, 5.1. Anyway, there'll always be things on the native platform that maybe you can't get to, but a hybrid app is a great way to bridge that gap, like for getting to the camera, for instance, or an accelerometer. Or if you like to use PhoneGap. In fact, Larry, don't we have some kind of big PhoneGap thing going on right now?
One thing I wanted to mention, though, if you're interested in development for Windows Phone, we have a whole section on how to use
Get out of town.
Yeah, this is more on the enterprise side.
Who might be delivering that?
I don't know.
Okay. Probably some slacker. I don't like him either. All right. Mobile databases. This is another thing that we use in the enterprise. We've been using for over a decade now. Anybody been building, going way back old school, building pocket PC apps for the enterprise and Windows Mobile, and Palm, and everything? And we always used, you know, you're out in the field, I'm syncing data, I'm capturing new data, my wireless network is unreliable, and so I need to have offline data. So we use mobile databases. It's just a big part of enterprise apps. So we have SQLite, which is the world's most popular open source embedded database for mobile devices, and it works across all versions of Windows. In fact, we just did a blog post, I think last week, where we talked about some easy-to-use new wrapper that we've got that I'm sure Mr. Wiggly's going to talk about at great length. Raise your hand, Andy. So we've got a great new wrapper to show you how to easily, from your .NET code on the phone or big Windows, work with that database.
Thursday afternoon.
I'll probably be on a plane. And then, of course, we have SQL CE, which we've had going back to the Pocket PC, and we let you access that from link to SQL. And then we make it easy for you to build in-memory collections of objects. You know, if you're calling a web service and pulling back a collection of data from a database table, you can have that in memory, and you can use link to query it, just like you would a database, and then we can serialize it. And, you know, I know we've talked about that in our sessions. Andy talked about some of that way to our file.io code and our Jumpstart that talks about how to do that. So we make that easy. So depending on the set of data, how big, you might be able to get away with just doing that, you know, if it's not giant stuff. Oh my gosh, what is this? Okay, this is the crazy slide. So basically, this is just a preview of my session, which will probably be the most important session of the week for the whole event on Wednesday. And this is where I talk about that 70-30 thing, where I tell you how to build systems that go from any backend out to anything. And so huge, mega, large-scale enterprise systems. Because I know a lot of times when we talk about building enterprise apps, we spend a whole lot of time talking about the phone rather than the place where most of the work gets done. And so on Wednesday, I'm going to do a session where I'm going to talk about the whole thing, all backends, going out, scaling out to ridiculous levels, sharding databases, caching, getting them out, securely publishing out using UAG, just like I talked about earlier, and consuming them from the phone, taking them offline, doing offline transactions, sending that stuff back to SQL, getting it back to its final back-end system. Maybe it's SAP, maybe it's a message bus or TIBCO or whatever. Anyway, I'll talk about that on Wednesday. Some crazy stuff. IE10, I talked about our great HTML5 investments. So faster and better. As important as HTML5 and its features are, equally important to me is the new browser war that we've been having for the last few years, which is great for everyone. It's great for the consumer. About speed and performance, right? And so IE10, we have, and we started this with IE9, we have hardware accelerated, we have, you know, part of our chassis spec too on our phone, the GPU. We require that the browser, the rendering of the HTML, the video, the graphics, everything, all that gets hardware accelerated. So it's so much faster. But then we go even further than that, and we have a JIT compiler for JavaScript. JavaScript is the programming language of the web. If you're building web apps for your enterprise, then you want a browser that's going to JIT compile your JavaScript because it makes it all faster. Because the whole point here is you want to blur the lines between native and the web, right? And this goes for the hybrid app, the hybrid web container thing. Those hybrid apps running, like if it's a PhoneGap app, and Larry talked about the contest we have, guess what? Your PhoneGap hybrid app is going to run faster than Product Z's PhoneGap app because our browser is faster and hardware accelerated and JIT compiled. So you see all that come through. Offline apps. You don't have to do hybrid apps to do offline. There's app cache, which is a feature of HTML5, the W3C spec, which lets you specify which web pages you want to pre-fetch and download and have them keep working offline. So I could put my phone in airplane mode, and I could keep entering data and navigating to my website, and it's working offline. It's a huge advancement. That's one of the big things. I mean, think about going back in time. Why did we build native apps over web apps. It wasn't always about richness and performance. Sometimes it was something more fundamental. Web apps meant I had to be connected all the time. If I wasn't, then I couldn't build a web app. Well, now we can build offline web apps where you don't have to be connected, and then combine it with things like IndexedDB to save that data locally. Save those data, you called those web services, take it to your offline app, insert it into your local IndexedDB database. It's great stuff. Remember the containerization I talked about earlier? We're locking down, protecting everybody. Well, the browser runs in its own chamber. It's in its own container. So the browser can't see outside itself to the rest of the OS, and the OS can't see inside. A lot of people worry, maybe rightly so, that the web is the worst place in the world for malware. People go to these drive-by websites that download things, or people inadvertently download things that harm their device. Let's just say we could let you do that. It wouldn't make any difference, because the whole browser is in a container, and so you could just download malware till your heart's content, and it couldn't do anything to the rest of the device. That being said, we've got Smart Screen. And Smart Screen's going to pop up that red screen long before you get a chance to download malware, because we make it our business to actively keep searching and finding bad websites that do that have viruses and malware and all kinds of things. And you know, right there you see we've already blocked over 1 billion malware download attempts. So we've totally got your six on that one, right? We send do not track requests. Now, whether a website, you know, honors that, it's another story. But you know, we're trying to ensure your privacy. And then data sense compression. This is a hardware server-based compression thing that we're doing at the mobile operator level. And we're rolling it out operator by operator around the world. The big takeaway here is it's compressing the most obvious compressible things, you know, pictures, all kinds of stuff like that, you know. Most of what happens on the web is it takes up most room is pictures and things like that. So we compress anything going over your data pipe. So you can enable this, and if your mobile operator has it, mine does. I'm with Verizon, and so mine has it enabled. The key takeaway, and this is big for business, maybe because a lot of us live in a fantasy land of all you can eat, you know, unlimited data, unlimited whatever things. But in a business, you know, it's about the bottom line, right? Saving money, making money. And so most businesses do pooled data plans, shared data plans. They work things for large blocks of employees. They do stipends and things like that. They want to get the best deal they can. If they know that there's a particular phone out there that could save them up to 50% data usage for a given data plan, they may be inclined to use that phone over another phone. So that's the big deal here. So if normally it takes a 2 gig plan for you to do your job, maybe a 1 gig plan might be good enough, and maybe you can cut the corporate costs in half. That's a discussion you should have with an IT director or a CIO, because it's legitimate. And last but not least, the store. I think we're over 145,000 apps now and growing. That number is way out of date. It's growing. You know, we saw the growth rates just skyrocket once after we launched Phone 8 last fall. And it's just going nuts. And we just keep expanding it around the countries. The language support, full right to left support, all this is huge in making sure you're getting your stuff out there to the most people, because you want to have the most reach and most visibility. And then, of course, in-app purchasing is something we added with Phone 8, because it's a popular way. It's a way to sell more. You know, if you can do the freemium model, right? If your app is free, and then they can download or purchase things within your app. That's a great model. So Larry, did you hear any breaking news today by chance?
I did. So one of the major research firms.
Can I get you on a microphone?
Maybe we'll save the news for the next session.
Oh, I knew he was going to sell me down the river. All right, maybe I'll have to stay around for the next session. There's some big news that literally breaking today. That's so like you, Larry. All right. So, takeaway. You learned all this fun stuff, right? Security, MDM, enterprise development, how to use the productivity tools. And so hopefully you're now empowered to have that discussion with your CIOs, IT directors, and everything about why Windows Phone is the best phone for business, why it's the most locked down and secure, great MDM capabilities, great app. Think about the app choice alone, app development choice. there are lots of other platforms where a lot of times you have to use just this one language or just this one paradigm, you know, and we try to give you as much choice as possible. So we've got, let's see here, upcoming sessions, of course. Wow, you know, it might be actually Larry giving this session next. I don't know. He's a pretty shifty guy. Anyway, lots of great sessions, Larry's. We got a really cool one also at the end of the day, this radical perspective of some mobility strategy. I'm all about mobility strategy, so you should definitely check that out. A full lineup tomorrow. And then just keep on blasting through. A great ratio between IT pro and developer sessions. Again, I hope you, we got some great hands-on labs. Hopefully you filled out your surveys, because I know we want to get a phone. How do we do that, Larry? Do they do it now, or would they do it now? All right. Do we have a survey person? You, yes. All right. Excellent. Yeah, pass your filled out surveys. I know you're thinking, oh, you mean I had to fill it out during the session? And then definitely come stop by our Windows phone booth out in the exhibition hall. A lot of phone experts there. Love to answer your questions and help you out with anything you need. We're beta testing this whole process, aren't we? Are we gonna have a winner now, or do we have a winner later?
Now?
Excellent. Well, that makes it even better. It's better to have a winner now. I don't have any patience. I need to know now. I'll just get to walk around up here aimlessly. Maybe I could do some karaoke for you. No, that's a really bad idea. All right. Any second now, I know we're going to find a winner.
Anyone else?
Going once? All right. All right, let's find us a phone winner. Excellent. So I just grab it. It's just going to put it in the Las Vegas auto shuffler here. All right. I've pulled one out here. I hope I pronounced this correctly. First name, Bente? Is that right? Well, come on up. You're the winner. Yeah. Give it up for Bente. Thank you so much for attending. I really appreciate it. Please come find me at the booth. I definitely want to talk to you about all your mobile issues. Thanks a bunch.